Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Welcome in, everybody, to an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Thanks so much for joining me today. I know that we were all hoping for a big Packers win. Monday Night Football, Philadelphia Eagles. I know many of you are here maybe to yell at me in the comments or maybe to try to get some Packers therapy. This was a very tough game to swallow for a variety of different reasons, primarily on offense. I wish I could look you in the eye and tell you I've got some good news for you, that I rewatched the game. It wasn't as bad as it looked. And maybe when I get to the All-22 later in the week, there'll be some positives that we can dig out and find specifically on offense in this one. We know there's positives on defense, and for the most part, special teams played fine in this game, but this was a gut punch because once again, your defense did a lot of things really well to keep you in a game that you ended up losing. And for the second consecutive week, the offense simply had no answers whatsoever. No ingenuity, no creativity, no ability to basically know exactly what was going to come, exactly what defense was going to get run, and have an answer for it. We're going to dig into all of that. We'll go over the exact issues in this game. We'll go over what needs to get corrected, what's coming up next for the Packers, some of the things that did go well, specifically on defense, and why this thing is just not going the way that I think a lot of us were hoping it would go and mostly expecting it to go, at least early on in the year. Coming off of, you know, back-to-back playoffs, the call for urgency by Brian Gutekunst, and then a pretty epic trade for Micah Parsons, and now Green Bay sits as the number 7 seed in the NFC as we get ready for week 11, and there's not a ton of time left between now and the end of the season to start getting things corrected, and even less time to get ready for this week as you have a short week following Monday Night Football on the road, I might add, and now going against a new coach, I might add, and probably some unscouted and unfamiliar looks with Mike Kafka taking over in New York. We'll go through all of that as well. End result, of course, of Monday Night Football is the Packers lose a barn burner 10-7. Their third loss of the year, all by exactly 3 points. That's the type of year it's been. In fact, they have 4 games in which they have not won, all by a total of 9 points. It's been that type of year. It's been interesting. It's been frustrating with some real signs of positivity early on and just a big stagnant fart noise in the middle of the season for this past couple weeks. And specifically, really since kind of the Washington game, everything has just felt, that's the best way you can put it. It hasn't felt quite right ever since Washington. And I know myself, I'll be the first to say, early on, first even 7-8 weeks of the season, as you try to gel as a team, put an offense together, figure out what you do well, navigate some of the injuries to Jaden Reed, Christian Watson coming back, now Tucker Kraft going out, Romeo Doubs going out in this game. Yeah, there's a point for me, for a coach that's put a lot of really good stuff on offense through his tenure in Green Bay, say, yeah, they're probably going to get it figured out. And then when you have these two games, and not only are you not figuring it out, but it's getting worse, to say that's cause for concern would be a pretty significant understatement. I do want to shout out our brand new Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube members, Steve Anthony and Ziggy Ziegler. Thank you so much for signing up to become brand new members. Appreciate you guys a ton. As mentioned, the Packers moved to 5-3-1 in the season. They are now third in the NFC North, behind both the Detroit Lions and, yes, the Chicago Bears. And they are 7th in the NFC, a half game above San Francisco for that final spot in the NFC wildcard. They have 3 losses and a tie, as mentioned, by a combined 9 points. In their 3 losses, they have scored a total of 13 points in the first loss, 16 points in the second loss, 10 points in the third loss, 39 points in those 3 games. If you would say that the Packers in three games would allow only 39 points, you would probably say, yeah, they at very worst went 2-1. Maybe they, you know, allowed 33 in one game and three in the other two and lost the 33-point game and won the other two. And if it was anywhere near around an average of 13 points per game, you're probably like, yeah, they probably won all three of those games. Instead, somehow, in those three games where they allowed 13 points, 16 points, and 10 points, they go 0-3. And yet somehow in a game that they score 40 points, they don't pick up a win in that one either. That, again, is the type of year that it's been for your Green Bay Packers. My key takeaways in this one is that the offense, as of right now, don't know what New York will bring. Don't know what Minnesota will bring after that or what this team will play like the remainder of the season. Right now, it's fair to say this offense is completely broken. It's an extremely porous offensive line. I tried to ring the warning bells on that for the last handful of weeks. I pointed out on my grades where quarterback good, running back good, receivers good, tight ends really good, specifically with Tucker Kraft. Offensive line really, really bad. Really, really bad. Red flag, sound the alarm. And we're seeing it over and over and over. We're going to go through some of those offensive line stats in this game as we move forward. This also played out almost to a T of what I kind of described it in the pregame show. On offense, they're in complete no man's land. Teams are playing that too high shell. Now, the first thing I want to say is, that's fine, and we're going to talk about why this has been an issue. This is not an unsolvable defense. This is not something that's new to 2025. You can't just get stymied and stuck by teams playing too high. Welcome to modern NFL football. You've got to be able to figure that out. And you can't just say, well, we can't run the ball, so you know we can't play against it. No, you still have to figure out ways to throw the ball and attack opposing defenses. Is it going to be easy? No. Can it be this level of inept? Also, no. But we talked about, if they're going to play too high safety, inherently, you know, so every defense has a strength and a weakness, right? What are they trying to take away? And what are they maybe allowing to you? And when you're playing a too high safety, the biggest thing they're trying to take away is explosive plays down the field. And while they're not trying to give it to you, but they're basically saying, can you run the football on us? Can you, with two safeties back, you know, corners wide, a light box, because we're not going to bring that safety down, can you run the football? We don't think you can. That's basically what it's saying. So they're taking away the deep pass. They're daring you to run the football. The Packers and Jordan Love and Matt LaFleur are obliging. Might have heard a lot of can. Jordan's counting the box. He's seeing too high safety. He's correctly getting into run looks. He's seeing that there's an advantage to running the football with the looks that they are giving. Save for the fact that Green Bay can't run the football. Not effectively, at least. Even with Josh Jacobs doing what seems like his damnedest to try to get every yard that's there for him. This team just can't run the football. And so then what are your solutions? You can't throw deep, you can't run the football. All right, well, last week against Carolina, you saw Green Bay say, hey, can we hit some of the horizontal stuff? And in weeks past, you saw, can we get some of the end arounds and reverses going? And in weeks past, the end arounds and reverses didn't work. And against Carolina specifically, but in other weeks as well, the wide receiver screens didn't work. So those are kind of out of the equation. We don't like those anymore. Those don't work either. Outside, all right, you got to win your one-on-ones. You know, we saw Dobbs throw that, Dobbs run that comeback. Jordan threw it to him. Quinnen Mitchell's all over it. Pass breakup, nothing doing. Good corners on the outside in Philly. Yeah, I thought Quinnen Mitchell had a really, really nice game in this one. Maybe got away with the pass interference on one play. So that's inherently tough. We saw, you know, even when Wicks or somebody would make it on the outside, it would usually be pretty contested, be a pretty tight throw. Even on like a quick out throw, you know, Jordan had to be perfect on the throw and it gained like 5 or 6 yards on an out pattern. And if he misses inside, it's probably a pick six. It's a lot of risk there with not much reward. So where does that leave you? well, it leaves you the middle of the field. You have to attack the middle of the field in some of those, you know, sometimes longer developing plays. A lot you would love to do it off of play action, get those linebackers to suck up, maybe throw over it. We saw those deep digs run, or, you know, run a couple times. We saw Jordan finally hit one late to Christian Watson, I think on that, you know, penultimate drive of the game. And the issue there is that the offensive line isn't protecting long enough for some of those longer developing plays in the middle of the field to actually develop. And that's where you get in this no man's land. You can't run. You can't run inside. You can't run outside. End arounds and jet sweeps aren't working. Outside screens aren't working. You can't throw deep because they're playing too high. And you can't throw, you know, intermediate to deep middle of the field because your offensive line can't protect long enough to get you in a lot of those looks. That's not absolving anything. You've got to figure out solutions. But this is exactly what we talked about. This is not me reacting. This is to a T what I talked about in the pregame show of where this gets really complicated for the offense, because you just look down at the play sheet and say, crap, we don't have anything that we can really lean on at the moment. And you saw that all game long in this game. I thought the defense was fantastic in this game. I thought they did everything they could to keep Green Bay. And we're going to go through again all of these in greater detail. This is just my key takeaways. But I cannot stress to you enough, when the opposing offense is playing from either, you know, even or ahead, and run and pass is both an option, and you're constantly scared crapless by Saquon Barkley, man, does it put you in a bind. And yet this Packers defense came to play. They limited Saquon Barkley. For the most part, they limited Jalen Hurts outside of one throw to Devontae Smith. Thought maybe Evan could have made a little bit of a play on that, but it's a great play by Devontae Smith, and really kept them in check and held them to 10 points and got a turnover in the game. I can't ask for anything more than that from the defense. Would you have liked maybe, you know, that third and 12 late in the game to get off the field? Yeah, I would have liked to have seen them get off the field in that third and 12. That's been entirely nitpicky on a defense that was phenomenal against a very, very potent Philly offense. Maybe not so much this year, but they're still a pain to play against. And Jeff Hafley and that defense basically shut them down for four quarters with no help from the offense, and certainly no like dynamic help from the special teams. I thought it was fantastic by the defense. So kudos to them. That defense deserved to win in this one. And unfortunately, the offense couldn't get it done for them. And then I thought there was competent special teams. We'll talk a little bit more about that as well. But I thought it was overall a winning performance from Green Bay special teams. And again, the offense just ultimately let this team down. The one good news, our Luigi's Pizza player of the game, I thought was Edgerrin Cooper. Six tackles. I thought he was aggressive, playing fast, and of course had the big force fumble as well, the play of the game for Green Bay. Don't have too much more to add onto it on top of that, but I thought he had a really nice game. We'll see how he grades out this week in our grades video, but I thought at first glance, Edgerrin Cooper, in a game where there wasn't many players to celebrate, Edgerrin Cooper gets my game ball for this one. Also, our Habish and Rotier injury report in this one. Elgton Jenkins fractured his ankle. Offensive line does not gain any help from that. It's been a struggle for Elgton. Don't know how he was, you know, at first glance, don't know, have a great definition of how he was playing in this game until we get to the All-22 later in the week. But it certainly probably doesn't help things that now Elgton Jenkins is going out with a fractured ankle. I would assume there's a chance that he can return this season. Usually the fracture is better than a torn ligament. If he avoided any torn ligaments, there is a chance maybe, I would think, playoff run that he could potentially be back if Green Bay can get to that point. But not great news overall for Elgton Jenkins. Romeo Doubs also exited with a chest injury. He did not return to the game. Matt did not have any further detail on it after the game. Other than that, he was not able to return. Green Bay, of course, on a short week this week following Monday Night Football, and could easily, will for sure be without Elgton Jenkins, could easily be without Romeo Doubs as well. We'll have to kind of keep track of that throughout the course of this week. As far as I know, there were no other injuries that were reported, and hopefully Green Bay got out of the game mostly unscathed outside of, again, their starting center and Romeo Doubs as well. Not entirely impossible, by the way, that was Elgton Jenkins' last snap as a Green Bay Packer. I think there's a chance he's back this year. And if so, he then will obviously play this year. But I can't imagine he's going to be back on that contract. He's probably going to want to find a bigger contract somewhere else. Don't think he was super happy with the way Green Bay handled the contract situation this past offseason. So if he doesn't play again this year, that was probably the last snap that Elgton Jenkins played as a member of the Green Bay Packers. But fingers crossed, hopefully he can make it back at some point this season. We'll be right back. Hey friends, today's episode is brought to you by Prize Picks. Now the weather might be changing, but the feeling of being right never ever gets old. So keep the season rolling on Prize Picks by getting $50 in lineups instantly when you play your first $5 lineup. Now it's time to start getting ready for week 11. Yes, week 11, where does the time go? As Green Bay travels to New York and a chance for Green Bay to show they can actually beat a bad team. This needs to be a big win for Green Bay, and I'm going with Jordan Love to have a starring performance to help get that big road win. Elsewhere in week 11, I'm going with big games from Ja'Marr Chase, Patrick Mahomes, and George Pickens. And here's the best part. Prize Picks is super simple. Just pick more or less on at least two player stats. If you get your picks right, you could cash in. And even better, how you play is completely up to you. If you want flexibility, choose Flex Play, where you can get paid even if one of your picks misses. And if you want the bigger payouts, go to the Power Play. No matter how you play, Prize Picks is a great way to put your takes to the test. So what are you waiting for? Download the Prize Picks app today using code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. That's code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. And don't forget that code PACKADAY. Prize Picks. It's good to be right. Anybody else feeling the financial squeeze right now? Everything just feels a little bit tougher, and I, for one, don't have the time to constantly monitor my finances and see where every little dollar and cent is being allocated. Thankfully, Chime understands that every dollar counts. That's why when you set up direct deposit through Chime, you can get access to fee-free features like free overdraft coverage, getting paid up to 2 days early, and so much more. I highly encourage that you take the time to learn more over at chime.com/packaday. Not only do we use Chime as a family, but I know multiple friends who use Chime and swear by it as well. The early payments, the free overdraft coverage, and access to over 47,000 free ATMs have not only been beneficial, but have come in huge in some really difficult situations. I didn't even mention the ability to get daily balance updates and real-time transaction alerts, which have helped shape our spending habits. So work on your financial goals through Chime today. Open an account in 2 minutes at chime.com/packaday. That's chime.com/packaday. Chime feels like progress.
Chime is a financial technology company, not a bank. Banking services and debit card provided by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. Members FDIC. Spot me eligibility requirements and overdraft limits apply. Timing depends on submission of payment file. Fees apply at out-of-network ATMs. Bank ranking and number of ATMs according to U.S. News and World Report 2023. Chime checking account required.
All right, let's go through this in a little bit greater detail. We're going to spend a lot of time talking about the offense. And the offense was offensive, not the way that you want it to be. I talked about the offensive line. Per Next Gen Stats, Jordan Love was pressured on 40.5% of his dropbacks. 40.5. So if you thought this was just a run blocking thing, it was not. And the combo of Josh Jacobs and Emmanuel Wilson carried for, you know, what was it, 20? It was, they had over 20 attempts in this game. It was fewer than 3.5 yards per carry between, and Emmanuel Wilson only had one of those. And so fewer than 3.5 yards per carry, in large part due to the offensive line, and Jordan Love pressured on 40.5% of his dropbacks. I am telling you, there's a lot wrong here. In fact, I'll start by saying everything was wrong on offense. I thought the offensive line was atrocious. Luke Musgrave had a couple opportunities like that fourth or third and 10 late in the game. If we're being real, Tucker Kraft probably picks that first down up, right? Luke Musgrave can't break a tackle, can't make anyone miss, can't get there. Not a terrible game from Luke at first glance, but those are the type of plays that you're missing with Tucker Kraft being out. Receivers drop passes. Thought some of the attention to detail there could have been a little bit better as well. You had wide receivers covering up linemen or extra offensive linemen that resulted in, you know, legal procedure penalties. I didn't think Jordan played his best game. Very interested to watch the all 22 of Jordan in this one. Thought there were some opportunities. If you want to know why, I think some of those missed opportunities happened. For a quarterback, when you're constantly getting pressured at the tune of 40.5% of the time, 4 out of every 10 snaps that you drop back, guess where your eyes go? Your eyes start to go to the offensive line a lot more. And we saw, like, even late in the game, Jordan's just drifting back and back and back. There's no clean, like, there's no clean pocket around Jordan. How many times did you see Jordan drop to his 3-5-7 step drop and then be able to step forward into the pocket and make a throw? Just didn't happen. Didn't think the play calling was good. didn't think the, you know, play design was good. They didn't have a great plan for this defense going into the game. Again, run blocking was bad. Just all bad. All bad. But to me, 1A is still the offensive line, and evidenced again by the poor pass protection as well as the poor run blocking. The fourth and one at the end of the game, or I guess, again, technically the penultimate drive for the offense. The final drive was the, you know, I can't believe they got the ball back even with an opportunity to do anything. Some bad decisions there by Nick Sirianni and the Eagles as well. But the fourth and one was like the perfect encapsulation of Green Bay. They have a draw called, or a, you know, inside zone, and everyone in the stadium knew it was coming. And the Eagles certainly knew it was coming, so much so that they called out the play before the snap. They're saying inside zone, and pointing to exactly where it's going to go. And then they just fire off the ball and completely shut that down. You had a play at the end that ended with a completely predictable fourth and one run that the Eagles knew was coming, that they completely shut down, that went for a 4-yard loss, that ended in a fumble, that also had an illegal procedure penalty. As I said on the live post-game show, if you were a attorney making a case against Matt LaFleur, and if you're one of the people that wants Matt LaFleur gone, that's exhibit A of like, hey, game on the line. Everyone in the stadium and the other team knew exactly what was coming, stopped you for a 4-yard loss, and there was a turnover, and you had an illegal procedure penalty. I rest my case, Your Honor. That's the case right there, right? That's as bad as it gets. The Eagles calling it out ahead of time. And Ben Solak, kudos to him, ESPN, put together a little video showing the plays and showing that Green Bay has run this play on numerous out of shotgun, hurry up situation, 3rd and 2, 3rd and 1, 4th and 1 situations. They've done this exact play. Eagles did their tape study. They were all over it, and they stopped the run. I will add this on top of things. I don't know what it would be. I was told a story one time, and this does happen in the NFL, but I was told a story one time by a very high up in the league. He's like, we went into a game and we found a tell on the opposing offense, whether it was going to be run or pass, based on if the quarterback's, I think it was the quarterback's leg, if it was, you know, back, it was going to be a pass. And if it was even, it was going to be a run. There was some tell on the quarterback. And early in the game, the defensive lineman screamed out, his leg's back, it's going to be a run, or whatever the tell was, right? And he gave away the tell, and they were able to correct it. And then they didn't get that the rest of the game. And of course, everyone hated that lineman or whoever called it out on that play. And they lost their advantage because they were going to basically know if it was going to be a run or pass the entire rest of the game. And now that was gone. It felt in this game like the Eagles had a tell on Green Bay. It felt like, and this is not just that they clearly knew the fourth down play, right? They're saying inside zone, they're pointing to where it's going to go and they fire off the ball. There were numerous plays where Green Bay goes to run the ball and the safety is like screaming up at the last minute. Now, it could have just been a great run call on defense or a defensive run blitz. It could have been some of that. I'm just saying there were a couple plays that I watched in the rewatch where I'm like, damn, it really feels like they knew a run was coming. Maybe that's tendency from Matt. It could easily be the case because he's been fairly predictable. And this offense has been very predictable, but it could also be a tell that Green Bay has. I didn't look close enough. Even if I did, I don't know if I would spot something. Remember, Philly had an extra week off to prepare for this game. It's possible as they're looking at film of Green Bay, they recognize sometimes it's something subtle, an offensive lineman that gets their foot a little bit further back and rather than a little bit further forward on a pass instead of a run, a quarterback that maybe lines up a little bit differently. Josh Jacobs, maybe his eyes do something. Like, it's just a game of poker out there, guys. And if they read something and had the tell, the old Freddie KGB twisting the Oreo, whether he eats it or not, I don't know what it was. But, you know, again, the most likely cause is just predictability on offense and tendency on offense and Philly being all over it. But man, it felt like Philly had a tell at times. Didn't love the 4th-and-9 play call for Green Bay. I take that back. Let me rephrase that. I didn't love the 4th-and-9 decision. The 4th-and-9 play call was fine, and Bo Melton's open on the play, and Bo Melton has to catch the damn pass. You also have Christian Watson not on the field on that play, and you're throwing to a player that's primarily been a defensive player through the year on your key 4th-and-9. I trust Bo Melton to come up with that play. He ran a good route. He's open. He's just got to freaking catch the ball. Just got to catch the ball. He didn't. That was a huge, huge turnover. And you know, it doesn't show up in turnovers in the stat sheet, but it's a huge turnover on a drop ball. Jordan did everything he could to get the ball there, deliver it to him on time. It's there, and Melton doesn't catch it, drops it, and it's a big turnover. Two illegal procedure penalties, not great. The wide receivers had drops. Jordan Love, I talked about him not performing well. Now, we talked about 40.5% of his dropbacks were pressured, right? Jordan has not been good under pressure this year at all. And that was the case in this game as well. 3 of 12 for 21 yards, sacked 3 times, and fumbled when he was pressured in this game. 3 of 12 for 21, sacked 3 times, a fumble. And obviously that fumble resulted in a turnover. That's brutal. Listen, I get it's not easy to operate in the NFL. Even when you're clean, it's a lot harder to operate when you're getting pressured constantly. But you've got to figure out a way to navigate that a little bit better. And Matt has to provide some easy button solutions for him too. I thought there were a couple in this game, and Jordan just didn't see him. Again, eyes probably dropping on the offensive line a little bit too much. You know, he did scramble on a couple different plays, but that's a brutal number. So again, I'm not going to put too much on Jordan until I go back and watch this one, but certainly did not feel like one of Jordan's finer performances either. I think he'd be probably the first to tell you that. And yeah, I think he even said something in his post-game press conference of, you know, obviously not his best game. Overall, offense completely stale and lacking creativity. I talked in the live post-game show, you know, there was a play early on with Matt. They would go with some bunch formation, and it would be 2 verticals and a slant behind it, a play I really liked. And they ran it a decent amount. And in a key moment on a 4th down, they go 2 slants, or they go 2 verts, and they're going to go slant behind it, but it's a slant and it's a pivot out. And the defense knew exactly what was coming because they ran this play so much. They jumped the slant. It's just about, they're about to jump the slant. He does the little out, you know, or, you know, the pivot route to the opposite side of the field, wide open, easy 1st down. Very creative from Matt. There's a play on 4th down. I think it's 4th down against Minnesota, on the road. And it's like, it's almost like they handed the fullback and the fullback's going, and then he has an option play. I want to say it was like to Randall Cobb or something. I'd have to go back and watch that a little bit, but like an unbelievably creative 4th down play that you just are never going to expect coming, that revolves like around a handoff into a speed option play. Just some beautiful stuff that, again, there's no creativity like that whatsoever. It's just a 4th down inside zone handoff that everyone in the stadium saw coming. I talked about that Rams playoff game where the Packers like to run those crisscross, you know, routes with their 2 receivers crossing each other and going up, and the corners would switch spots with each other a lot of times in those. And so Green Bay had a tell on the Rams, and they went to do the crisscross, and the Rams corners started to flip. And then instead of crossing, they just went back the way that they came. And the corners like tripped over themselves, didn't know what to do. You end up with a wide open Devontae Adams for what I think amounted into a touchdown. And that's the sort of stuff that early in Matt's career, and you know, over his tenure in Green Bay, we would see that stuff. I thought the ingenuity against Indianapolis and Tennessee last year, when you didn't have, you know, Jordan Love at quarterback, and you basically invented the spin, not invented, but, you know, brought out the spinner series, you know, offense and run game without even a threat of a real passing game, and put together an unbelievable game plan. Just all of that creativity and ingenuity that we've seen from Matt over the years, just completely non-existent right now. I mean, completely non-existent. It just feels like the most bland, obvious play over, like the series of plays over and over. So that's obviously a key issue. And again, Jordan, I thought struggled with, you know, with the pressure, like we talked about as well. Packers at halftime of the last 7 halves, or the last 7 games, 3 points, 13 points, 10 points, 6 points, 7 points, 6 points, 0 points, 45 points in the first half in their last seven games combined, under 7 points per game, under, 7 points in the first half per game over the last 7 weeks, and only 19 points in the first half of their last four games, 6, 7, 6, and 0, averaging under under 5 points per game or per half. You guys know what I mean. Under 5 points per half in the first half over the last four games. It's just not going to get it done. Per Eli Berkovitz in this game, over the last two games, the Packers have had 11 drives in opposing territory, scored 20 points. So Panthers and Eagles games, 11 drives in opposing territory and scored 20 total points. Just beyond brutal, beyond brutal. Packers drives in this game, punt, 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 fumble, turnover on downs, punt, touchdown, fumble, missed field goal that had no chance. I'll read that one more time just for fun. Punt, 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 fumble, turnover on downs, punt, touchdown, fumble, missed field goal that had no chance. An abysmal, brutal, no good, very bad day on offense for really two consecutive weeks. And real signs of a broken offense that's going to need some significant fixing and getting things back on track. We'll see if they can do that on a short week against New York. Defense played mostly a bend but don't break defense. I thought it was a really impressive performance like we talked about. Philly was able to stay unpredictable, meaning run pass all game long, and you still held them to only 10 points. Jalen Hurts, 15 to 26, 183 and a touchdown. Saquon, only 60 yards on 22 carries. A 2.7 yard average. That is as good as you could ever possibly ask for against Saquon. AJ Brown, their star receiver on the outside, two catches for only 13 yards. You forced a fumble, allowed only 10 points. Big play by Adrian Cooper on the forced fumble. I thought they rallied to the football, played really aggressive defense all day long. And I thought Quay and Cooper were really fast and physical in the middle of that defense as well. You just can't ask anything more from the defense. Kudos to Jeff Hafley. Kudos to that group. No sacks on the day, no interceptions again. So you'd like to see maybe a few more of those big plays, but we're not going to complain about anything from that defensive performance. That's as much as you could possibly ask for in that game. Special teams, the decision to kick at the end and probably going with Brandon McManus, who is clearly not fully healthy and talked about still not being fully healthy. You decided not to kick two longer field goals in this game. My guess is that Brandon McManus's leg probably has something to do with that, and his injury to that leg probably has something to do with that. You have two kickers on the 53-man roster and yet decide to consistently go with the injured one. I cannot make heads or tails of that. It makes zero sense to me whatsoever. Yes, I've said in the past I would have gone with McManus. I thought he was healthy. He clearly is not still at this point. That is a very head-scratching decision, and I don't know how to define it or defend it in any way. Just seems like a really odd choice for Green Bay. Thought they should have gone for the Hail Mary at the end there. Didn't like the decision to kick. Never had a chance, clearly. Daniel Whalen had two touchbacks on the day. One of those was from Bo Melton going into the end zone. That happens. That's the least of my concerns at this point in time. Stavion Williams did have a 33-yard kick return. They also had a pressure on a punt that resulted in a muff punt. So that overall, a winning day for the special teams. Nothing super sexy, but winning football overall. Some miscellaneous notes. Matthew Golden, LVN, Nate Hobbs, Lucas Haversick, Donovan Jennings, and Jacob Monk were your inactive players for this game. Only one tush-push, I think, from Philly, if I remember correctly. Maybe it was two. I don't know. I lost track. Didn't care. But the tush-push was not a major factor, although Philly got away with a major false start on their tush push. Green Bay tried a QB sneak later. They had a false start. That one obviously was called because why, of course, would it not be? Sean Ryan was your center once Elton Jenkins went down with the injury. Jordan Morgan played at right tackle the entirety of the game, as far as I can remember. I didn't see any rotation. I'll look at that a little bit closer on the All-22 this week. Christian Welch was your practice squad call-up prior to the game. Green Bay finally did get into some six offensive line looks like we talked about with Mike Wallen a little bit with Justice Mosqueda earlier this week. They had a legal procedure penalty. They also had a false start on those. So you know what? They went with six offensive line, which was great. didn't seem like they really practiced it all that much, or if they did, maybe this was still something new because they had some errors on those six offensive line plays. We'll be right back. I'm not sure about you guys, but it's a season for hosting a lot of holiday dinners, get-togethers, and big events, and all of that planning, cooking, and shopping can take a huge extra toll on my stress levels when there's already so much going on. That's why I leave the stress behind and rely on Omaha Steaks to help me prepare amazing meals for all of my family and friends this holiday season. And not to spoil some gifts for family members who may be listening, but I've definitely been picking up some Omaha Steaks as gifts, which makes holiday shopping super simple as well. The best part is that you can benefit with their Sizzle All The Way sale, which you can get 50% off. Yes, 50% off site-wide at omahasteaks.com. Plus, listeners get an extra $35 off with promo code PACKADAY at checkout. I'm actually hosting a birthday get-together this week, and the freezer is stocked with amazing steaks and burgers from Omaha, which is making things super simple to prepare and plan for. And if you haven't tried the food yet, it's beyond incredible. I can't recommend it enough. I especially want to shout out their grass-fed, grain-finished beef that has more marbling for exceptional flavor. Now, Omaha Steaks is a family-owned company with over 100 years of expertise in the meat industry. So don't miss out on this deal and save big on gourmet gifts and more holiday favorites with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide during their Sizzle All The Way sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code PACKADAY at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. That's omahasteaks.com with code PACKADAY. Luke Musgrave was your primary tight end per Justice Mosqueda over at acmepackingcompany.com. He played 51 snaps at tight end, only 14 for Fitzpatrick and only 6 for Josh Wiley. So a huge disparity there. And Luke Musgrave, clearly your tight end one with Tucker Kraft out. As far as the coaching goes, just simply not good enough all the way around. Defensive, you know, performance was great. So no issues with Jeff Hafley there, but decision-making, preparedness, you know, mistakes, you know, some of the six offensive line stuff where you're having illegal procedure penalties, an extremely predictable fourth down call that everyone knew was coming. Yeah, you have every right to be as frustrated and complain as much as you want on this one. Every single right. It was a very, very poor performance for really the second week in a row from Matt. And some of you will argue longer than that, maybe, but these last two have been really frustrating and really, really brutal. One of the disheartening things for me from Matt was in his press conference, he was talking about the run game and he used the word solid and effective when running the ball. Solid and effective on a day where Jacobs and Wilson combined for 22 carries for 76 yards and a 3.45 yard average. That is not solid, nor is it effective. That scream, and I know part of it's maybe just defending his guys, like that screams complacency on something that is well below where it needs to be. That is of anything that I've heard from Matt, that's honestly one of the most concerning to me. Because if 22 for 76 on the run game on a day where your offensive line did not play well and you couldn't run block, if that was, quote, solid and effective, I don't want to know what a bad day is. You had to run the football. You did it consistently. You went into this game needing to run the football and you couldn't run the football. Not even near 4 yards per carry. And you did it 22 times. He ran into a brick wall lot, only 76 yards on those carries. That is neither solid nor is it effective. Thought a lot of it was predictable, which we talked about. Decision-making, certainly suspect. The timeout before halftime, something that makes zero sense whatsoever. There's 4 seconds left on the clock. The only thing that can happen is Philly can do it. They're not going to punt to you. If they were backed up deep in their own territory and punting away, if you fair catch a punt before the end of half, you get an untimed down to kick a free kick for a field goal from where you fair caught it. That would make sense to me. They were never going to give the ball back. Now, if anything, you know, there's an opportunity for a defensive penalty. Maybe they try a Hail Mary. Thankfully, the Eagles just rolled out and chucked it out of bounds. But there's zero reason for a timeout in that scenario. None. It's just putting your guys out there for an extra snap. And can you imagine if, like, you know, thankfully something like this didn't happen. Can you imagine if they go out there for that stupid play and Micah's coming around and one of the offensive linemen blasts him and like Micah gets hurt on the play for something that you never needed to be running in the first play. Just a crazy decision to call a timeout there. And then per Warren Sharp, opening drives for Green Bay, they are 30th in the league in scores per drive and number 26 in points per drive on opening drives. So for a coach, again, that is, you know, supposed to be offensive minded, scheming things up and being well prepared for opposing defenses, their opening offense has been beyond brutal, beyond brutal. So really, really rough for Matt LaFleur. For those of you who would like Matt LaFleur fired, I will say two things. One, the hot seat's real. We'll readily admit that. You guys were ahead of it before I was. Like I said in the live post-game chat, maybe I'm just a slow learner. I tend to give a little bit more of the benefit of the doubt until things become a trend and until things start to really regress, get worse, and there's real signs of decay. These last two games have been regression and some real signs of major issues on the offense. So it's real. Do I think there's any chance that they fire him in season still? I will give a slight percentage higher than I would have previously, where if like all of a sudden they go on like a 4 or 5, 6, 7 game losing, it's like something crazy in season, then yes. But there's nothing imminent, that's for sure. And he's going to have the opportunity to dig himself out of this. That's also for sure. But the seat is very warm. And if this does not get corrected, then we're going to have lots of conversations going into the offseason as to what this looks like. And Green Bay is going to have a very interesting decision on their hands of what they want to do at head coach. But do not see anything happening in season. Don't think anything should happen in season. But like I said, that seat is getting very, very toasty, very, very quick. And we'll see how Matt and this team responds. Said that after the, you know, the Carolina game. Not great so far. Not a great response, which is why that seat continues to get hotter. Let's see. Anything else about the coaching? No, I think those are the main things. As I mentioned, Packers are 7th seed, a half game up on San Francisco for the final spot in the NFC playoffs. Half game back of Detroit and Chicago in the NFC North. Two games coming up against the Giants and the Vikings that are going to feel like must-win games, no question about it. Then they follow that up with at Detroit, Chicago, at Denver, at Chicago, Ravens at home, and then at Minnesota to end the season. Chicago is at Minnesota this week. Minnesota is favored for that game. Detroit is at Philly this week. Philly is favored for that game. Green Bay is heavy favorites against New York. If things go chalk, Green Bay would be back in first in the NFC North after this week, but nothing has seemingly gone chalk in Green Bay's way as of late, so we'll have to wait and see exactly what happens there. Final thoughts here. Gut check time. Big time gut check time for the Packers. Offense feels a little bit in crisis mode. They're going to have to find themselves really, really fast. And their offensive line is playing like hot garbage. And they now go against a Giants defensive line that consists of Brian Burns, Dexter Lawrence, Carter, their rookie defensive end, whose name is escaping me at 4:44 in the morning. And then Kayvon Thibodeau as well. Their defensive line is very good, is what I'm trying to say here. And that's going to be a potential problem. So if Green Bay wants to get better, it's going to start on the offensive line. And Abdul Carter, I wanted to say Andre Carter for some reason, Abdul Carter. And their defensive line is really good. It's the one thing they have going for them. Now, Jackson Dart, concussion protocol, that remains to be seen of kind of what happens there. So again, the Packers are 7.5-point favorites in the game. Brian Daboll just fired. Mike Kafka takes over as head coach. Not sure who the quarterback is going to be. Could end up being Russell Wilson. Maybe it's Jameis Winston. Maybe Kafka wants to go in a different direction, or maybe Jackson Dart is able to play. We'll have to kind of keep an eye out for this one. Giants have lost 4 in a row against the Broncos, Eagles, 49ers, and Bears. Some decent teams in there, right? Green Bay is going to have to try to keep that losing streak going. And again, this is going to feel like a must win for Green Bay in this game. Injuries for Green Bay to keep an eye on this week. Matthew Golden, who didn't play in the game. LVN, who didn't play in the game. We know Nate Hobbs is going to be out. We pretty much know Elton Jenkins is going to be out. Going to need to keep an eye on Romeo Doubs as well. That's all I got. Coming up the remainder of this week. Paul Bredel will be on later today, second episode on Tuesday, members Q&A and Paul Farrington show on Wednesday, Justice on Thursday, Grades and Happy Hour on Friday, Carmen Vitale on Saturday, pregame, live postgame on Sunday. And then we'll also keep an eye out for those Mike Wall episodes this week and a bonus episode for members for Aaron Nagler as well. Shout out to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Boom Handle, Donnelly, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Alex Wong, Peter Ataka, Jay Zimmerman, B. Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gesford, SoCal Pack, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, Ian Ewing, Carlo Delgado, Willie Winkle, Sinkle, Jen Wright, The Gable Storm, Packets at Cast, Chris Weish, Craig, John D. Metropolis, Hayden Radomski, Devin Lane, Gonzusa, Alexander Newell, Dan Miller, Bill Reinhart, Richard Morales, and Les Nienau. I will leave you with this from Micah Parsons in the locker room following the game. He said, quote, "I wouldn't panic. I wouldn't stress. We're going to win football games. I promise you." Hope that Mike is right. Enjoy your Monday, or enjoy your Tuesday, everyone. I'll see you guys all very, very soon. But until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.